This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
Rick Britton is with us online at rickbritton.com. He is live in studio, and we'll open up the phone lines in just a couple of minutes, 977-1070. Rick, I was in New Jersey and New York.
Yeah, I heard.
And for a couple of days, talking to UVA alumni. Great time. Good
at
folks.
At Princeton?
At the Princeton Public Library, right across the street.
Okay.
Beautiful,
okay. Nice.
Beautiful room right there on Nassau Street.
Right.
Really, really an amazing, beautiful town. Really, I hadn't really spent much time there before. But driving back, well, while I'm there, it's all trains.
Right.
Man, trains everywhere. You can just hop on a train anywhere.
Yeah,
you can hop
great?
On a train in Princeton, you're an hour and you're in New York City.
Yeah, it's great.
Oh, that's the way to go.
Yep.
I mean, Virginia is just so far behind the eight ball on that.
Yeah, know? Whatever happened to the train from Charlottesville to D.C.? We have one running early in the morning, don't we, for commuters? Because there are people
not really
who commute.
It's not really, it doesn't get you there in time for work.
Oh.
But it'll get you there, like, in the morning.
Oh.
From what
okay.
I've heard.
Yeah. Didn't know that.
But I'm driving back, I'm coming down Route 29,
right.
Blowout.
Oh.
Blowout. Right rear tire, completely blown out.
Oh, man.
Pull off. And it turns out, right where I pulled off, I was 200 yards from the Orange Madison Co-op. So I have to give a shout out to two people there. Patricia at the front desk, and Donnie, who's back in the shop.
Right.
It was just like Mayberry. They're like, oh, what's wrong? Oh, bring it on in here. We'll fix it. Don't worry about it. We'll take care of it. And then she's like, you know, I think this tire is completely shot. Let's get you some new tires. So give me a deal and so a couple new tires. And, oh, that was just fantastic. I would go back there in a heartbeat. The Orange Madison Co-op. Good folks, good times.
That's
and I got
great.
To watch a Bonanza rerun while I was waiting.
So, wow.
It doesn't get much better than that.
There you go. Which Bonanza was it?
I don't know.
Who's
somebody,
your favorite character on Bonanza?
Somebody was shooting somebody.
Who's your favorite character on Bonanza?
Oh, I don't know.
Hoss.
Who's the older guy who's the head of the family?
Yeah.
You gotta go with
Lauren
him.
Green.
Yeah. He's just so stylish.
Who was then on Battlestar Galactica.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Rick Britton is with us now. you were also at UVA back in the day?
I was back in the day.
We were talking to Mike Gleason about his...
Oh, you had to bring this up.
His memory of the student unrest at UVA. And
yeah.
You were there.
I was, but shortly thereafter. He was talking about student unrest in the late 60s. So I came to UVA just a few years later in the early 70s, and I was telling you that part of the admissions process, and perhaps some people will be shocked to hear this, I had to sign a piece of paper. I was in Brazil. I graduated high school in Sao Paulo, Brazil, so they send you this packet. I had to sign a piece of paper saying that I understood that if I demonstrated on the grounds of the University of Virginia that it was grounds for expulsion.
Not that you would be expelled, but that could be used.
That it was grounds for expulsion.
If somebody wanted to
That's right.
press charges, quote unquote.
So the solution at the time, if you wanted to demonstrate against the war in Vietnam, is you did it with a mask on. And so that's
really?
How we demonstrated with masks, wearing masks. Yeah.
Because to get in, you had to say you wouldn't demonstrate.
Right. So you didn't want to be identified as a UVA student demonstrating.
Wow. And did you demonstrate in Charlottesville or other
we
places
demonstrate
too?
Demonstrate.
This is a. You got a lot of stories about this, I bet.
let's see. I demonstrated on the lawn. I demonstrated at Scott Stadium, a number of different places, especially at Scott Stadium when ROTC was holding a drill that turned into it was kind of a nasty demonstration, and people in the crowd were screaming at us, and we were screaming back at them, and it was pretty ugly.
Wow.
Yeah.
Gosh. It was a different time.
A different time,
not
a different
that there's
world.
Not things today worth protesting, but...
plenty of things today worth protesting. Absolutely.
Yeah. But you really don't see that kind of coordinated action on grounds, on campuses, as you once did. You still, I'm not going to say that young people aren't protesting, because they are.
They are.
You know, and they certainly volunteer more than any other generation ever
well,
has.
I think you just used the word that makes the big difference, and what it is we've got a volunteer army nowadays, and the people who are going to Vietnam were draftees.
Which made it very, very different.
Right. It spread the pain all across the country. I mean, we're at war, but we're not at war. You know, the pain isn't being spread all across the country, and if it was... There would be uprisings like this. There'd be demonstrations against the war. You know, if they reinstituted the draft, which they won't do because they're too smart to do that.
Because they know that then the protests would.
Exactly.
The voice of the people would affect their.
And would actually put an end to some of this nonsense.
There you go.
Yeah.
Rick Britton is with us. It's 4:42. Let's open up the phone lines at 977-1070. We'll give away some Domino's pizza, and we'll do it right here and right now. And how will we do that, Rick Britton?
We're going to do that. Here's the first question. True or false? Thomas Jefferson invented the polygraph. That is that unique letter copier that's on display in his cabinet at Monticello. True or false? Thomas Jefferson invented the polygraph.
977-1070. That's the phone number if you'd like your crack at some Domino's pizza. Mighty good. It's free. And first caller to get through, we're going to give you two tries at this, of this true-false question. That's how we do. That's how we roll. That's how we play the
Everybody
game.
Everybody wins.
Let's go to the phones. Caller, what's your first name?
David.
David, how you doing? Happy Little Friday.
Amen.
What's going on?
The answer to that question is yes, he did.
No, no, it's not.
Oh, David, David, take another shot. Take another shot.
Let's see. That was just a practice.
Yeah, answer. There you okay. go. Yeah, that was
my
a practice.
Real answer
take a
is
mulligan.
No, he
that,
didn't.
That's correct.
Absolutely, of course. And Rick, explain to David the history of the polygraph.
David is, you know, you're not so wrong in thinking that he did, because probably everybody else on the planet thinks that he did, too, because it's one of the things that used to be told at Monticello. And if you look on the Internet, if you Google it on the Internet, there are plenty of sites that say he did. But actually, it's the invention of Dr. John Isaac Hawkins, who was from London.
The Hawkster.
And he had a patent on it, so he actually invented it. He granted the American patent rights to a good friend of Thomas Jefferson's, Charles Wilson Peale.
The painter.
In Philadelphia, right. Yeah. So if you look on the polygraph that's in display in the cabinet at Monticello, it's the Hawkins and Peale polygraph, patent 1803.
How about that?
Now,
that's good stuff.
One thing that he did do, they sent him samples. He had two at varying times, and he wrote back to the to his buddy Peale up in Philadelphia and made some suggestions to improve it. So they did incorporate some of Jefferson's suggestions. So he didn't invent it, but he helped improve it.
He was a bit of a tweaker, wasn't he?
He was a tweaker.
He was a tweaker, not an inventor. He was a tweaker.
Yeah.
There you go. David, hold on just a minute, okay, buddy?
Okay, I will.
There you go. There's David on line one, and he is the big winner with some Domino's pizza. And let's do this again, shall we? 977-1070. You got one more?
I do have one more. A committee of five was chosen to draft the Declaration of Independence. One of the members strongly urged Thomas Jefferson to actually write it. That member was A, Benjamin Franklin, B, John Adams, C, James Madison.
Who was the member of the committee who said, you have to write this?
You have to write this.
Let's
Absolutely.
Go to the phones. Caller, what's your first name?
My name is Mike.
Mike, how you doing?
Pretty good. How are you doing?
Very good. Mike, you heard the question?
Say it one more time.
Okay, right. Here it comes. You ready, Mike?
Uh-huh.
Okay. A committee of five men was chosen to draft the Declaration of Independence. One of those members strongly urged Thomas Jefferson, who happened to be the youngest member, to actually write it. That man was A, Benjamin Franklin, B, John Adams, C, James Madison. Who was it?
James Madison.
Ooh!
Oh, take another shot, Mike, quick. You guys have a mulligan.
Adams,
absolutely. There
you go.
Good job.
Mike, hold on just a minute. We're going to hook you up with some Domino's pizza. You're the big winner on Charlottesville right now. Rick Britton is with us online at rickbritton.com, and he is live in studio. So explain that last one. It was John Adams.
It was
Got
John
up in his
Adams.
Face and said, look, boy, you got to do this now. Come on, make it happen.
They did a great job on the HBO special with that actor that played John Adams, Giamatti, is just fantastic, and he did a really great job. John Adams actually wrote this later on to Jefferson, and what they did was they incorporated it into a dialogue between him and Jefferson for the HBO special. And he has three really good reasons why Thomas Jefferson should write it, and not him. He says, number one, you are not universally despised like I am. number two, you're a much better writer than I am. Really good reason. And number three, which might be the best reason, a Virginian. We need to have a Virginian at the head of this thing and not another man from Massachusetts.
Because it was Virginia that suggested that the colonies secede, right?
That's right. It was a proposal by Richard Henry Lee, one of the Lees.
Yeah. But that's the reason
Stratford.
You guys moved this, or was it something about just the leadership of Virginia?
Not the only reason. Virginia was ahead of the other colonies, and of course, in the movement toward revolution, to breaking from the mother country, but also Virginia was the most populous by far. You had to add two or three of the other
Kentucky,
states together.
West Virginia.
Yeah, and Virginia, just massive.
Yeah.
And a lot of people, yeah.
And of course, in some respects, the brain trust of the revolution. It's not where the violence began. The violence began in Massachusetts, of course. That's where the fighting started.
Right.
But the thinking behind the revolution, a lot of it went on here.
I remember going to school in Richmond and being taught, let's see, this was probably in first grade, that Patrick Henry was the voice of the revolution, Thomas Jefferson was the pen of the revolution, and George Washington was the sword of the revolution. All three Virginians.
All three
so
Virginians.
You don't need any other states, see?
Yeah.
Don't need anybody from Massachusetts or Pennsylvania.
You ever see the musical 1776?
I have, but a long time ago.
That's great. I got to see that again.
Funny stuff,
it's
right?
It's really funny, and it puts all of the things they write to music, to song.
Okay.
Like a lot of the original things right out of the letters are in song.
Okay.
Oh, yeah,
so
it's great.
So Jefferson is singing and dancing?
Oh, yeah.
Dancing?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's fun. It's a stage show and a movie.
Franklin is dancing in this?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's really good.
I have to see it.
What do you want to talk about?
what we made it to today, actually, is the very nadir of his political career.
What's that
mean,
nadir?
It's the very bottom. The
opposite of zenith.
The pit.
There's the zenith at the top and the nadir at the bottom.
This is the bottom.
Yeah.
And it's his service as governor of the state of Virginia during the American Revolution, 1779 to 1781. We would be really hard-pressed, and I am hard-pressed, to find some positive things that happened during his governorship. Sad to say, but there are a couple, so we can talk about those. Number one, when he took over as governor, 1779, and it's interesting, some of the people who ran against him were his close friends, boyhood friends, John Page and Thomas Nelson Jr. were people who ran against him. So people he had grown up with, but also people he'd gone to William and Mary with. So that was kind of an interesting competition. But the state capital was still at Williamsburg, the colonial capital, the old colonial capital, which hadn't moved all that far from the original capital of Virginia, Jamestown, probably all of, 10 miles?
Yeah.
It moved from the swamp there at Jamestown. So one of the things Jefferson did the very first year in 1780 was to move the capital up to Richmond. Now, the main reason, if you think about this for a moment, it's abundantly clear. The Brits have this powerful navy, one of the greatest navies on the planet, and they completely controlled the eastern seaboard and the Chesapeake Bay. So Williamsburg, colonial Williamsburg, the capital there, is incredibly vulnerable to attack from both sides, you know, the James and the York rivers. They can sail up to, obviously, Yorktown was a port, and they could sail all the way up to Richmond. The idea to get it up to Richmond, though, was to bring it up there away from the seacoast, but part of the idea was to build forts and batteries along the James River, like the Confederate States government did later on to protect the Confederate capital at Richmond. And we talked about all that kind of stuff.
To keep ships from coming up the rivers, yeah.
Yeah, to keep ships from coming up all the way up to Richmond, because you could.
Yeah.
You could sail all the way up to Richmond and just bombard the state capital at Richmond. Unfortunately, you know, they moved the capital to Richmond and then never built the forts. So later on when Arnold invaded Virginia in 1781, he was able to sail all the way up and just take Richmond. So if you do, you can't just do one. You have to do both. But at least he tried to protect the state capital, all those papers, the government, the legislature. If you think about that, it's a lot of stuff by moving it to Richmond. So that's a positive thing that he did. Should have also tried harder to build those forts. One of the problems that Jefferson had as governor, and anybody would have that as have the same kind of problems as governor, is in the Virginia Constitution, they had created a very weak chief executive. And I think
the power was in the assembly.
And I think that it was possibly because, you know, one of the things they were rebelling against was a strong was having all of the power, you know, in somebody like a king. And so they refrained from doing that. They wanted to keep the power closer to the people, and you do that by having the power vested well, mostly the power in the legislature.
Of the presidency was supposed to be rather weak as well.
Right, just a little bit later. Yeah, you know, absolutely.
It's just only over 200 years when they've decided to give themselves certain powers that the Constitution did not.
Right, so on top of everything else, Jefferson had advising him a council of state, an eight-man almost cabinet that was appointed by the legislature. So he's doing pretty much what the council of state tells him to do as a committee. So on top of everything, he's got these guys always looking over his shoulder. I think any governor would have had some of the same problems that Thomas Jefferson did. Another positive thing that happened was he continued support for a man who happened to be out in Kentucky, and that was George Rogers Clark. George Rogers Clark, the conqueror of the Northwest, we've got a statue to him right here in Charlottesville. Probably nobody has any idea in Charlottesville who this guy was, but it was amazing what he accomplished. He's actually the older brother of William and Clark, the same of the Lewis and Clark expedition. He's much, much older. I think probably as many as 20 years older. He was out in Kentucky, and Patrick Henry, who was the first governor of the state of Virginia, he was governor before Thomas Jefferson. He had started this support, sending arms, sending powder out to Henry, and the idea was to reduce and eliminate, if possible, the British control of what we used to call the Old Northwest, and today we would call the Midwest, Ohio, Indiana, Illinois, yeah. Michigan, part of Wisconsin. Eventually, with this small army, and it's amazing when you tell this story, people don't believe it, but this is what George Rogers Clark did. He sealed Virginia's claim on Kentucky because there were incursions across the Ohio River south into Kentucky, and then with an army of fewer than 200 men, he ousted the Brits from that huge area out there so that by the end of the American Revolution, Virginia, of all of the states fighting the British, had the greatest claim to Ohio, Indiana, Illinois, Michigan, and part of Wisconsin because of the military campaign under George Rogers Clark with like 180 men. And when you think of that vast area, it's kind of hard to believe that 180 men could conquer it. But there were only a few British-held outposts. And once you had overthrown and taken those outposts, the British were gone. And the Indians were going to go along with whichever white nation was in control. And so that wrested the British control away from the Indians out there. And so he sealed the Old Northwest. So that's why Virginia had the greatest claim. And then at the end of the American Revolution, immediately following the end of the American Revolution, Virginia magnanimously gave up its claim to that territory so that the United States could have it and form those new states. And then, of course, and we'll get to this a little bit later, Jefferson wrote the first Northwest Ordinance of 1784 after the end of the Revolution.
Rick Britton, he's online at rickbritton.com. We will talk again, sir. Thank you
very much
for being here.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit sevillepodcast.com for more.